Good afternoon. This is Katarina Koliva, the Executive Director at the Council of Deans of Health, and I'm delighted to have with me today Professor Aisha Holloway, our member from Edinburgh University. Welcome, Aisha.
Welcome to you too. Very nice to be with you.
Wonderful to see you and to be with you this afternoon. We are reflecting on BME issues in academia and particularly in healthcare, higher education, our sector. And I wanted to first ask you to give us your reflections on Black Lives Matter. This has become almost another pandemic on top of the COVID-19 pandemic. And it made us really realize how important these issues are and how alive they are in people's minds.
Yeah, I mean, I guess for me, it's good to see this, but it's quite frustrating in many ways. And what I mean by that is, why is it that something has to happen as traumatic as we have seen for this suddenly to become a major issue? And it's not the first time we've seen it. And we seem to go in cycles where we are shocked or outraged as a nation or as globally across the world. And then we raise the issue and we show that through voicing our concerns, showing that there's a movement behind this, either by marching, etc. But it has to be more than that. It has to be something much more than that and much more fundamental that is not going to be solved overnight. So while I am really glad that we're in this situation now and we have this opportunity to start having this dialogue, it can't be that in a couple of weeks' time we're now on to the next thing. So I'm always a bit, I kind of sit back and watch because I'm looking for something more meaningful.
If we bring this home to us in our sector, how big is racism in academia and indeed in healthcare?
I mean, it's interesting when we reflect on identifying specific areas of society where we think this is, but it's actually endemic. I think it's everywhere. And every workplace, in every aspect of our life, in schools, it is there. So rather than we say, well, yes, it's there in academia, well, of course it's there because it's everywhere. There is no place where we can't feel this or see its presence. So I think it's more, I live with an assumption that it's there. And this is an opportunity for us to really reflect and do something meaningful.
Tell me about you and about your passion for identity. I know it's something that's very close to you, and I know you've been looking at research around people's identity and how they shape and form who they are professionally and personally and in life and the choices they make. So how much is identity relevant here in all its shapes and forms?
I mean, I think it's at the core of who we are. And for me personally, so I have a very interesting identity because here I am with a Scottish accent and a Scottish mother, but I have an African father from Sudan, North Sudan, not South Sudan, as the country is split now, and was born in 1970, where it was very unusual. So I kind of came into a world that wasn't probably quite ready for children of mixed race. And so for me, that has always been with me in terms of, well, who am I, you know, and this mixture that I have, completely different parts of the world. And of course, I feel very Scottish. I was born here, but I'm completely engaged with my other identity from my other life, and in a way being a nurse. is part of my identity. So you put all of that together, and it's very interesting because I guess as an outsider, and I've always felt like that in many ways, although I feel this identity to Scotland and to my father's heritage. But interestingly, I think nursing for me has made me feel part of something. And that is where I think I would hope that there wouldn't be significant issues. But isn't it very interesting that that has become the very heart of this idea of inequality and racism and what is going on, whether that's subtle, whether it's you know, it's overtly racism, I don't think it is, but this is where it's sitting. So I think there are many things to consider. It's a very complex landscape, and one, again, that reflecting on the current conversations and particularly the media, try sometimes the my worry always is it's too simplistic to say that it's simply racism and we need to be anti-racist, because there are many components and elements to this. And I don't, unless you walk in the shoes of another person, whatever that may be, whatever your differences in life, I don't think you completely understand it. So my experience may be very different to someone else. And colour, there are shades of colour. And I think I've always in my life felt I was, as someone of mixed race, I was never white enough, I was never black enough. And I think that is a very interesting place to inhabit. It's not as simple as being black or white.
What does that make you as a leader? Obviously, you're not just an academic and a professor of nursing. You are also heading a department in Edinburgh University, leading professors, academics and students. Mm. And obviously, big relationships with your civic mission as well, working with a wider community in Edinburgh and beyond. So what does that, how has that shaped this identity you just described to me? How has it shaped your leadership?
Yeah, I think hugely. As some of you will know, that I had the great opportunity to do a Florence Nightingale Foundation scholarship, leadership scholarship. And that was very much around who was I? How was I able to make change? And really for everyone who feels that they can use their position to influence change, the very core of that is your identity and who you are. And I think, and this may be true for others who often feel like outsiders, that that brings great strength to of character in these roles, because you understand that we are not all the same, but that differences bring great talents. And you also, I think, have an entrepreneurial streak in you, because if you are not the same as everyone else, so I grew up in a school where I was the, certainly at primary school, I was the only person who wasn't white, and there was very little diversity at high school. So you attract attention in whether you're, it's the colour of your hair, whether you're larger or smaller, whether it's your sexuality or not. So being different attracts attention. And to navigate that landscape, you have to become very attuned to people's perceptions and way of being with you. So as a leader, I think it just has made me more tuned in to people, but particularly has influenced my area of research and my work, where it is about exploring the experiences and doing the best for those people in society who experience inequality the most.
What do you say to a student or a member of your team who comes to you for help to say, look, I've just experienced racism, I've been bullied, X person told me why? what do you do then?
I think this is, thankfully, I've never had that experience so far. Although I've experienced it myself, not for a long time, not overtly for a long time, mostly in my younger years and in my early 20s, overt racism or bullying. I think it's about compassion. I think it's about acknowledging it, the experience that someone has had, but we have to confront it. We have to be brave. We have to speak out. And it would be my role to do that. I certainly can't, I wouldn't be able to, it just isn't in me to do that. And I think, again, that strength has come from some of the challenges that I've navigated growing up, being mixed race in Scotland. And I'm not saying Scotland hasn't welcomed me. I've got a really strong identity. You know, I, in many ways, I'm Scottish, but I have a heritage that is different.
Obviously, you're a member of the Council of Ministers of Health, both in Scotland and UK-wide, and you've been very actively engaged in policy and politics over the last years, Aisha, and you come to all the meetings. And how diverse is our constituency? I know you were one of the first members when I came to this role that challenged me around diversity. So one of the reasons why I was really, really keen to speak to you today was about exactly that. What do we do to make our academic leadership in healthcare more diverse? Diverse in terms of thinking, diverse in terms of all the characteristics.
Yeah.
Race, gender, sexual orientation, which brings all that richness of thinking that you've described.
Yeah, I think there are two key areas for us, and I've been very aware of it, particularly here in Scotland and across the UK. There are very few people with that diversity. So I think, first of all, in academia, we've got to understand where do these academics come from. They come from the very students that we bring in and educate. So there is an issue around who is in academia and who's coming into academia. So the already registered nurses who are considering a career, perhaps, or are early into a career, I think there's an issue around that. But also, who do we attract into the healthcare profession? And that's not only an issue in the UK for the nursing workforce, that is a global issue and challenge across cultures. So we lack diversity, certainly in many areas, in who we attract into nursing. And in Scotland, that's quite a challenge just by the very nature and profile of our country anyway. Although in Scotland, we are always, I feel, very welcoming to different people, which is one of the things I like. I think Scotland has a very strong unified identity. And I would, you know, I feel very comfortable here. But to attract that diversity, we have to all open our eyes and see the change that is needed. And I think our students coming in hold some of the answers to that, most definitely. We've spoken quite a lot with our current students, and even my own children, my eldest son, I talk a lot to him about diversity, and his perception on the world is very different to what mine was at my age, or perhaps my cohort, because his world is a different place to what mine was at that same age. So I think young people and the youth have a lot to give, and we have a lot to learn from them.
So we've noticed from our own research and the staffing census that we carried out at the Council of Deans of Health earlier this year, and you recall we published our staffing census survey results in January 2020, we saw that there is a discrepancy between the number of BME professionals we have frontline in the NHS and beyond the NHS, and then the number of those who move from roles of frontline to education, who change sector. And then again, a discrepancy there in terms of those, how those progress into more senior roles. So we've got a large group of frontline staff who are BME in terms of their background. They then don't seem to be progressing at the same pace or at the same level as other colleagues would and getting up the higher positions within the NHS. And not only that, but fewer of those also get to education. And when they get there, a much smaller number end up being a dean or a head. I mean, it's obvious within our constituency when we meet. It's very different to be in a Council of Deans of Health meeting and in a nurse, I'll use the nurse example, but obviously it can apply to other professions, but a nurse network of frontline workers. It changes perspective, doesn't it? So is it a higher education issue, or is it a healthcare higher education issue, or is it a hierarchy issue?
For you. I mean, is it just a microcosm of society in general? Because it's back to this issue where we're seeing what's happening in academia, but what is happening in large companies? What's happening in companies on the FTSE where we look at board level? How many have chief execs who are females? Where is their diversity in terms of race, gender, etc.? So again, I think what you describe, we perhaps see that in other places. And therefore, is that just a reflection of this inequality that exists in terms of opportunities, in terms of what is available, in terms of life chances, in terms of the system that is not there to provide entry into another world? And that's where I think we've got a little bit more work to do. So I think absolutely the work that you're doing to profile this and look at why is that the case? I think we need to go out and ask people why that is the case. Ask the people themselves, what is it that is stopping you from doing this? It's a simple question.
It is. You have to ask the questions. Absolutely right. As you know, we engage very much with students through our student leadership program, and you've also engaged with them, Aisha, giving sessions and coaching them as well. And what I hear from them when I ask those questions about diversity in the wider sense is the importance of role models. And the fact that if I can't see somebody up there that looks like me, I don't believe I can do it. So there's one view, which is that. Then there is the opposite view, which is the reason why I am so committed to making it up is because I can't see anybody like me. So it does work both ways. So how has it been for you? You mentioned that you were born in the 70s. You walked your life, your way through an academic route, and as you did that, you noticed that you were probably an exception to the rule. You described how it was in primary school and then all the way up to one of the best universities in the country, leading and heading a section there. Obviously, you're obviously one of the few, so how does that feel?
I mean, I have to pinch myself every day about this because I can't believe it. But do you know what's really interesting, and you probably won't use this, I come from a small town called Perth, And I was just speaking to some people, and there are these amazing nurses who have come from this small town called Perth. And I think, wow, how did that happen? They are all white, but clearly, I've gone from, a normal school, working class background to this career. And I have to say, nursing has given me that. However, it comes back to the identity, in that I think I chose nursing, but the difference I wanted to make was always related to my feeling of maybe not being good enough, being different. So it was almost like, well, what was I good at? What could I prove myself to be good at? Irrelevant of what colour I was or what people said to me at school, I knew I was good at the academic side of work. So I thought, that's, if I'm good at this, that's the thing that I'm going to be really good at, and I'm going to show them. And there was a little bit of that fire in me. And I had an amazing mother. She was, I remember going home crying because somebody had said something really not very nice to me about the colour of my skin. And, she was great and very proud, made me very proud of who I was, but it was very difficult. And how did I navigate academia? I have to say, it was more around people who wanted to be those change makers and wanted to be slightly disruptive. but fueled by this passion about equality. It was always about equality. That's probably the biggest driver in me, that I was somebody, why should I be different because of the colour of my skin? Why does that make me any less able to be equal to someone else? And that really has filtered through everything I've done. And I've been lucky, I think, in many people supporting me, I have to say. So great people have seen something in me and given me an opportunity, probably rather than I kind of had a plan to be a professor at Edinburgh University. I think there was a lot of luck on my side. But it was, I've always thought, I don't see myself as a role model, although I do for people of mixed race. If I'm in a room, I scan a room, and if I see someone that I identify with, isn't it interesting? If I see a young nurse now, I think that was me. I was that one person sat in that room as in that nursing class. And I kind of always, I think, wonder how they feel. So it is like, back in my mind.
I'd like us to move from Scotland to the world. You've been leading a lot of global work, yes, with the World Health Organization and the Nursing Now campaign. Yeah. Talk to me about how that diversity in terms of the number and breadth of people that you engage with, the variety of countries, nationalities, ethnicity, backgrounds, knowledge, yeah, how did that make you reflect on your belonging to that community? I wonder whether, mm-hmm, I know we haven't discussed this before, but I'm intrigued by the opportunity of you talking to me about how you feel in a global context versus your local national context.
Yes. So I really relate to that global context. Absolutely. I feel like I'm with people that I understand and they understand me. And it's so interesting because I see that even sometimes with my students, my international students, where there is a connection, absolutely, in terms of their culture. I've got a very, my name Aisha is a really well-known Muslim name And it's, you know, the Prophet Muhammad's favourite wife. So by nature, the fact that I've got a Scottish accent, yet I've got this name, instant, there is a connection. And I love that. And I really feel I can relate to this idea of that cultural difference. So I very much enjoy that global work. But I'm very, again, it's not all the same. You know, I just understand that there are cultural nuances and slight differences, even within different countries, regional within countries. And I think that is really important. And I've been lucky through my life, just with my heritage, that I've had exposure to that growing up and from a very early age. So I have that both sides of the coin. But the global work is great. And global nursing is, I kind of see us always as a global community.
I can see how passionate you are about this. Well, as you took it, and you know, if only our listeners could see your face, you know, how you kind of glows when you talk about global issues. I'd like us to move back to the Council of Deans of Health and our core strategy and focus. Obviously, we are about to embark next year on a development of a new strategy that will take us to the next 3 years and beyond, as our current strategy is about to finish next year. So what would you like to see different in there, and how would you see diversity? This is the opportunity to shape that narrative, Fasha.
I mean, I guess firstly, I have to say, I think the Council of Deans, since I've been a member, has, you know, under the team that's there, has just been amazing, and you've done fantastic work. And some of the initiatives, or all of the initiatives, but there's been some key initiatives there that have really just progressed our position and our voice, and I'm really grateful for that. It will be one of the things that I very much miss when I come out of my role as head of nursing at Edinburgh, that community, because I think it is, we're into a different landscape and a different position now with the work that you're doing. So to hear about your new strategy very much excites me. And here's the thing, I do want to see global in there. And that is interesting because we're a UK organisation, but if COVID-19, for example, or Black Lives Matters, for example, have taught us nothing, then other than we are a global community. So it is no longer okay for us, particularly within health, to sit and think UK. If I think about migration, health workforce migration and nursing, that is going to be and continues to be a big challenge. And we may see some differences with post-COVID-19 with that across the world. We know from the evidence and the statistics that have come out of the State of the World's Nursing Report that there are significant challenges across the globe in relation to workforce, and not just in terms of, in many countries, an aging workforce, you know, recruitment retention, but it varies depending on region and even within region. And that really has an impact for us in terms of workforce coming in with our regulators and then people leaving to go to other places. So I think that is a big issue that universities collectively need to be having a conversation with governments around. You know, do we have a health workforce plan that meets that need moving forward? And obviously, in terms of diversity, absolutely. I think it probably has to be one of the key initiatives, and equality. You know, I think we have to really think very carefully about what that looks like and how meaningful it is. And I think here's the thing, we love to group people under an umbrella of groups. So we're labeling people, and actually we are complete within these subpopulations, and you know, the LGBTQ group. If I think about my own work in the criminal justice system, even within prisons, you know, these people are not all the same group of people. There are men, there are women, there are older people, there are younger people, there are people on remand, there are people not on remand. I mean, I think we need to stop thinking about groups as homogenous groups of people that we need to do something with or we need to listen to. That's not the case. Within these groups, there are very different experiences, and that's the issue about in some of the papers that I'm reading around race, and how people from mixed race backgrounds experience racism, often very different to people who are Black or people who are from a different culture. It can't just be one strategy serves all. So I think that's kind of that's my thinking.
Thank you so much, Aisha. You've given us quite a lot to take away. My reflections on our conversation over the last half an hour have been very much about the importance of identity, linked to your professionalism and your leadership and your style as a professional and an academic, the link between academia and society. You know, academia is a microcosmos of society ultimately, so whatever happens in society gets replicated in our small world of academia, so let's not forget that. And it's about changing society that will bring change within our sector as well, and it's kind of important to making those links. Your passion, commitment for global and your vision of looking at the Council of Deans of Health as an organization that pushes itself further and forward to global agendas and enabling us to look out essentially and not just look inside. And finally, your point about embracing equality in order to bring diversity, is that kind of push and pull situation where in order to get one you need to have the other, and they are inevitably interlinked.
And also the other thing, I think sometimes we can really be quite inward looking, which I think is the other issue about global, because you know, some of the work that I'm looking at the moment around workforce, and there are some great models of how these challenges have been addressed successfully in countries across the globe that you wouldn't even think of. And I've just been reading some great papers. So I was lucky enough to be an observer at the Triad meeting last week, WHO Triad meeting with the CNOs from across the globe in my role with Nursing Now. And Jim Campbell is the editor of a journal, and they have a special edition for Year of the Nurse and the Midwife. So I was reading his work is very good around workforce. And of course, workforce has played a big part in the WHO work. And you had Jim at your event, the other Jim, also that I was lucky enough to attend. But I think there are solutions out there. And I think partnership is the key. So the Council of Deans will never make the change that it would like to make. I'm not saying it's not making the change. It is. It's a huge, significant change. But at some point there's a ceiling, isn't there? And it's how do we break through that? And how do we really gain that momentum and almost that social movement and on the ground grassroots? So Council of Deans needs to be not just about the deans and the members, and that's why your leadership program is so fantastic, because this is great. This is, you know, these young students, they need to be with people like us. but they need to realize that this is not a million miles away from them, that we together will do this. So likewise, what other organisations and universities globally are there and what are they doing about these challenges? And can we work together and can there be some partnership working there? Because I think that is where we will see some real growth and some innovation.
Innovation, yeah, I think you've made it very clear that innovation is through a collaborative partnership and learning from the world. So it's looking, again, being very open to the wider world.
Yeah, not just operating in silos.
Thank you very much, Aisha. Professor Aisha Holloway from Edinburgh University. And again, as we've done with previous podcasts, we will be sharing resources that Aisha mentioned, particularly those publications of World Health Organization. Thank you and goodbye.
Everyone read it.
Definitely will. Thank you.